I'm talking about. Are there eight of us in this committee?
There are. That's right. So there's no.
Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today is Tuesday, April 28th. It is 6:17 in the evening. We're still waiting for a couple fiscals, unfortunately. So I am going to open a work session on House Bill 3089. We're not waiting on that one. It's a carryover from our meeting this morning. This allows the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt by rule schedule civil penalties for violations of wildlife laws.
Amendments?
We do have amendments, and we need to have the amendments explained, actually, probably, for folks, because they have some broader things in there. Where's our ODF and W? You want to come up and help us with the amendments?
Dash fives.
You're going to be speaking to the dash four and the dash five.
I got to find the fours. Twos.
Dash five. Are we doing four and five?
Well, I don't know. I've got four. I got five.
Okay. 3089.
Mr. Chairman, which amendments are these good people going to talk to us about?
They go together. Excuse me.
We're in 30.
I don't remember the specifics on that.
We're not the access.
I don't know. Okay. Do you want to explain both and what the difference is? Because they're identical with one point, and I can't remember right now what the one point is myself.
Chair Klim, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. I'll focus on the Dash 5 and the Dash 6 amendments, which are the most recent ones.
Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Anglin,
one moment.
I don't have Dash 6. I'm sorry.
I
have Dash 5. But if you have a copy,
then I only have Dash 5s. As well.
I'd like to walk through them with Mr. Anglin.
I don't know how difficult
that's going to be.
Copy of the Dash 6.
So, why don't we?
If he wants to start, that's okay. No, as long as I have it in my
You want to go ahead and start?
Certainly. We'll start with the Dash 5.
That'd be great.
Being as you all have that one. Basically, what has happened is we took the original House Bill 3089, and at the request of the chair, there's been several different bills that have been combined into this. And in the Dash 5 amendment, it takes the no net loss of public hunting opportunity off of lands that the commission has authority over and inserts it into 3089. That's the first portion of the amendment that you find on page 1 in section 1 and 2. Carries over into Section 3. The department had a bill, or there was a bill that was introduced by one of the legislators that would grant the A&H Board the authority to purchase. Originally, it was to purchase land or access easements with A&H funds. We met in a special committee over the concern over the purchase of land and amended that out and left it strictly with the authority to purchase easements only with A&H funds. So that's the second portion of this amendment, and that's found on page 3, line 21.
That's on Dash 5.
This is on the Dash 5.
No, it's on Dash 5.
And then the next significant portion of the amendment is found on page 6, and this was a request that we offer that the commission be directed to look at the ability. This is found on page 6, lines 29, 30, and then over onto page 7, the ability for people holding Pioneer licenses to if they were unsuccessful in the controlled hunt draw, instead of receiving one preference point, that they would receive two preference points. So this directs the commission to explore that option and look at the potential for rulemaking. And then on page 7, Line 13 is the start of the civil penalty section, which was the original House Bill 3089. And it gets into giving the commission the ability that if the courts don't make some decisions on civil penalties, that the commission, when they deemed appropriate, would have the ability to go through a civil penalty process and request or assess, rather, civil penalties against somebody that's broken the wildlife laws. There were several discussions going on amongst the hunting organizations and the fishing organizations on what those penalties ought to be, what should be the critters included in that, and you can see that they went through and amended some of the values for some of the animals that are found on the bottom of page 7, running over onto page 8. They increased the fee schedule or the civil penalty schedule substantially on some of these animals. And also for fish, that was added in on line 18, and it was and also on 21, and this is primarily to get at people that are taking oversized sturgeon. There was no special dispensation on that in the past. And then also as part of this, on page 9, the top of the page, we had discovered that based on a case that had occurred up in Portland, we're on page 9, top of the page, line 1, but a case in Portland where some people that had and were racing roller pigeons were actually having problems with peregrine falcons, and they were going out and killing falcons and hawks in order to save their pigeons that the birds were killing, and you know, it went through a fairly high-profile case. So at the request of Portland Audubon, we worked with the group to include language that would allow civil penalty authority for taking of certain special birds, and then a little lesser amount of fine and penalty for the more common raptors. And then the final portion, well, not quite the final portion, then on page, it's the bottom of page 9, the last line, and the top of page 10, the same type of thing, inserting language into section 3 that gives the ability, if there's been two or more violations by a person, you know, right now there's the ability for the courts to assess that or go after that as a Class C felony, and we added in the ability for if there were two or more violations on an individual taking a raptor, that they also could be prosecuted for the Class C felony. And finally, on page 11, and then going on over onto page 12, it's an increase in the time that a person could be suspended if they were convicted of a violation. So it would increase the amount of months that they could be suspended, lose their licenses or tags from the lowest level, 24 months up to 36 months, on up to the ability that if there were three or more suspensions, then they potentially could be suspended up to 5 years, or if it was really bad, that they could be prohibited for a lifetime from buying a hunting and fishing license. And that pretty much sums up the dash 5. There's a lot there. The dash 6 is identical to the dash 5, but does not include the no net loss that is found on page 1 of the dash 5. So otherwise, dash 6 is identical to the dash 1.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Representative Schaffer, please.
Yeah, Mr. Engel, thank you. We discussed the scenario of a young man who's out hunting and he makes a stupid mistake. And there's pretty hefty penalties in here. Would there be some flexibility if he makes an honest mistake, or if he's just young and stupid, or she? Is that flexibility in here, or are these absolutely mandatory penalties?
The intent is for there still to be flexibility like there is today, and that it doesn't necessarily kick into the mandatory It just updates some of the current statutes.
Thank you.
One question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
We're on page 7, line 17, 16, 17. Penalties of that section must be imposed in the manner provided by RS 183. What's that? What is that? 183.745.
I have not looked at that specifically, but that lays out the process for state agencies to go after civil penalties. And, you know, my guess is that it's like the contested case hearing process where we and the commission have to go through a specific process in order to do that.
Just to the floor. Do we have all the paper, or does it spin?
So, did we notice that the what Representative Wingard likes to accurately call everybody loves Grandpa? There is back towards the back a section on the commission. I'm trying to find it now.
It's early. It's on page 7.
I being think. Able to add preference points for pioneer hunters.
Six. Yes.
Maybe so, bring that
okay.
up.
Okay. All right.
The old folk.
Well, I. It's just. I'm saying pioneers.
It's going to make Grandpa very popular.
Grandpa's going to be a popular guy. I think Arnie, Representative Roland qualifies.
Yeah, I get that.
And I do.
So, again, the key difference between the dash 5s and dash 6s is the addition of the no net loss of hunting along with the authority to do acquisitions tied to no net loss of hunting.
Now, there's enough of those. That's correct. That's the only difference. Dash 5 is the no net loss, dash 6 is gone.
So it's the dash 5s that I like.
You ready for a motion?
I am.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes,
can explain to me in the dash 5s where it allows for acquisition of land.
On page 3,
it's not acquisition of land.
There's no acquisition of lands in the A&H program now. And on page 3, it would just be through the acquisition of easements under the access and habitat program.
This is just easements.
Just
yep.
easements.
Thank you.
No acquisition of land.
Well, I thought we were going to go acquisition of land as long as you had the no net loss, but that's not in here.
No, we sat down and worked through with the representative that sponsored that bill and worked out this compromise.
Okay, that's fine. I'm happy.
I'll do the dash 5.
So dash 5.
I move. You want me to move my own?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move that we adopt the dash 5 amendments into House Bill 3089.
Representative Krieger moves the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3089. Any discussion? Any opposition? Not the bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3089 as amended. Move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3089 without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review.
Representative Krieger moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3089 without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review. Those the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3089 without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review will say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Excuse.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Roblin.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Wimber.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Klum.
Aye. Motion passes and the rule is suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the House Bill 3089 as amended and sent to the floor with the due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3089 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wingard.
Pass it.
I'm going to support the bill. The rate at which we are increasing these fines is noticeable. And it's I guess the word I'm looking for is a little troubling. It's such a dramatic increase, but I am going to support the bill, but I will have more to say on the floor on this bill.
Representative Shaw.
Mr. Chair, I respect Representative Wingert's position on that. It is a radical increase. But we spend, I don't know how many millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars on these resources. And if some monkey out there is poaching them, I have no problem putting the hammer down on them. I'm glad there's flexibility for people that make an honest mistake or a young person who does something foolish. But I wish we had a fiscal on how much we spend on these resources. So I think in light of that, the fines are almost, they're virtually none. So, but I appreciate the representative's concerns. It is a radical job.
Any further discussion? Representative Killian.
Chair, now this does not cover exotic animals, is that right?
I'm pretty sure that's correct.
It would have covered Snowball.
Albino deers would have been covered.
Yeah.
And that dog, too.
Didn't he have a famous dog in his system?
Representative had just mentioned monkey, and I just wanted to clarify.
My Uncle George had a chimp. Didn't rip anyone's face off like the other one, but he had one.
Okay.
All right, then. George Carver. He's down in California. Okay. Any further discussion on the
whole bill?
If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Oh, I'm just going to...
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Wingert?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Klein?
Aye.
Motion passes, and House Bill 3089 is sent to the floor. Gilliam. Representative Gilliam.
I'm cramping up.
Pardon? Would you like to carry this bill?
No, but thank you.
I'll carry the bill.
I'll support you.
Let's do the other signed kind of forestry bill here. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2216. Work session. Let's get our paperwork together.
Which one did you open?
2216.
So we'll need rules to spell them. We've got dash. I think this one has to go to both ways and into hand rather than.
That's not stated on the agenda.
Okay, so we've got dash two amendments to 2216. I think we'd already amended them with dash ones earlier on. That's why our thing's labeled dash one. Now they're sitting as amended, and we understand there may be a fiscal, so we need to send them to Joint Ways and Means and Revenue. We can have an explanation if people want, but I think the amendments have to do with technical treasury-related things that will be sorted out in these other committees.
When were the dash twos made available to us?
What's that?
When did we get the dash
428.
Dash twos?
That's when they...
Actually,
when
we want the draft forestry come out.
It's not necessarily when they became
the dash twos.
That's true.
Or the treasurer's office. I don't know who we got here, but you're welcome to come explain the dash twos to us.
We got them tonight, I think.
I remember we had this conversation.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doug Decker. I'm the project leader for the State Forest Division, the Department of Forestry. I'm joined by Cynthia Burns, bond counsel for the Department of Justice. Did I get that right?
Not bond counsel, they're the outside guys. Okay. Cynthia Burns of the AG's office. I represent the Office of the State Treasurer in most of the state's bonding activities. And here I'm representing forestry.
All right. Mr. Chair, you're correct. All of the dash two amendments are technical, kind of plumbing related language to get the bonding authority, the bonding mechanisms to match up with existing bonding mechanisms in the statute.
Okay.
you want to probe further on this?
I would.
Yep. Representative Shaw?
I don't even have a dash two. When did these come out?
This morning.
They came out about 3:30 today.
Yeah, this talks... Oh, thank you. Let me just keep this one. This talks about the board may... The board may acquire lands or partial interest in lands, including but not limited to conservation easements. Are there any specific lands that this bill is relating to, or what exactly? What can they do now? What can't they do now that this is going to allow them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, that language was in the original bill language, and what this does is this brings up to date the Board of Forestry's acquisition authority in terms of being able to acquire lands that that have conservation easements on them. Right now, the board and it's gone back and forth over the history of the board's acquisition authority. But right now, the board may not, under statute, acquire lands that have some type of easement on them. So what it does is just allows us to kind of brings the language up into the 21st century.
I'm going to follow up briefly, Mr. Chair. I want to make it very clear for the record again. This Gilchrist property, 95,000 acres or something like that, if I remember. I don't want that purchase to be made into a park or wilderness area or anything like that. It's a working forest, and it should be ran and managed as a working forest for the benefit of this state. And I know you guys aren't going to make the decision, but I just want to make that clear for the record. That's what I want to see happen. Now, whether that happens or not, I do not know. And this question of language, greatest permanent value, needs to be, I think, continue to be worked on. I'm not satisfied with what we have in statute now. I may never be satisfied, but I will be voting for this because either we buy it and we do what I just say, or the potential is we don't, and then they sell it off for 160-acre lots. I don't think that's necessarily in the best interest of the state either. I don't know. I'm torn on this one, but thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Trush, you may recall, this is the one we heard last week where you had the state forester give you an assurance. Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Well, I don't have any questions, as long as we're making comments on it. I'm disappointed in my colleague from the Portland area, because I think the inevitable will occur here. And while I do not like the idea of seeing this land parceled up for residential, it would at least still be on the tax rolls under that scenario. As much as that's not the way I would like to see it go, I would like to see it continue as a working forest. The least attractive option to me is the one where the government acquires it and then it ends up being put into museum status, and it becomes a net burden on the taxpayers, because it's not producing any revenue or jobs, significant jobs for the local community. And I have no longer have any faith that the acquisition of public lands, and this isn't just an Oregon phenomenon, but I'm talking about Oregon right now, that the acquisition of public lands doesn't inevitably end up being the preservation of those lands rather than the conservation of those lands. And for that reason, I cannot support the acquisition of, I mean, we already have half of this state in public hands. And I cannot support increasing that percentage.
Mr. Chair, did we adopt the dash ones?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We did the other day. And then these were the technical ones related to bonding.
So the dash ones are, and this is in addition to it.
Correct. And I need a motion on that at some point.
Just a second.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. That helps me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative.
This answer, that's better, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2216.
Representative Krieger moves the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2216. Any discussion? Any objection? Not the bill's amended.
I'm sorry, did I not register my objection?
On the amendment?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Winger objects to the amendment.
Thank you.
So we're still amended, and
one comment,
yes,
please. Representative Wigger, in the dash ones, page four, Klamath County Management State Forest, I would produce economic benefits for the area, including but not limited to income from harvest of forest products and direct employment, economic benefit for processing forests, harvest forest products. So we did get it in the dash ones, where it's pointed out that that's what it's for. So I didn't want you to...
All right, I don't have the dash ones, but will you point out where they are in the dash twos?
They're not. They were separate. Dash ones, we adopted this... Dash twos don't do away with the dash ones. They're an addition to. They're an addition to, and they're the technical fixes.
Okay.
I think that's right.
Mr. Chair, can I clarify with staff?
Representative Shaw.
We moved the dash one at a prior work session, correct?
Correct.
And that has the language was just read by the representative. Now we're adding the dash two.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's why it says... The new amendments were the dash ones to, I mean, were the dash twos to House Bill 2216-1. I mean, if you read the dash two amendments,
right.
It says they are the dash twos to the dash ones.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sure that's suspension. I thought they should all be.
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2216 as amended without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review.
Sorry, just Representative Krieger moves that the dash two, no, we already adopted the dash twos.
And the dash ones.
Yes. I'm, Representative Krieger moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2216 without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review. Does the opinion of the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2216 without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available for review? Shall say aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative
Groblin?
Aye.
Representative
Shockwood?
Aye.
Representative
Winder?
Me?
No.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Klein?
Aye.
I remember.
Motion passes. The rules are suspended.
It does have subsequent
referrals to Ways and Means and Revenue.
Okay. Mr. Chair,
finish this. Just come on.
I move House Bill 2216 as amended. The floor of the do pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and then on to Revenue.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2216 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means and Revenue. By prior reference or whatever, not by prior reference. Is there any discussion? I still have a quorum, though. I have five of us. Okay. Do we need
five votes, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Okay. Just
one,
set
two,
it easy for one second.
I'm a no.
That's what I thought.
You can give him a courtesy vote.
Rule suspension.
There was a motion for rule suspension already, and Leon voted no, so it would be a change.
So, Representative Wingard.
Courtesy of the Goldmeyer.
Well, he can change his vote.
Would you like to change your vote from no to aye?
Yes, Mr. Chair, more than anything.
Representative Wingard changes his vote from no to aye. Motion to suspend the rules passes. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Byers is going to be glad you didn't make
this motion.
That's probably why I did it. I don't. She sits right here. She can make my life miserable.
We've already made it. I've already made it.
Okay.
Repeat. We're good to go from here.
The motion on the floor is Representative Krieger moves the bill as amended be referred, well, to the floor with a due pass recommendation that be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means and Revenue. Is there any discussion?
Yeah.
Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
No.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Klein?
Aye.
Sad.
Motion passes. Bill is on to Ways and Means and Revenue if it gets out of Ways and Means. Okay, we're finally ready on 2228.
Remember this.
We'll start with Director Whitman, who is going to walk us through the Dash 2 and Dash 4 amendments. Then we're going to hear from two of our colleagues, if you'll just bear with us for a moment. And I'll start by describing it. This bill, originally, I had asked to have moved over to the Land Use Committee, and the committee said, we have all the expertise in the world right here to take care of it.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. I finally realized last Sunday at about 4 in the morning you were right. So the bill calls for a number of pilot projects in the underlying bill, and the Dash 2 and 4 amendments call for specifying a few of those projects and then some additional criteria to try and ensure open access for hunting and a few other things. But Director Whitman can walk us through walk us through the Dash. I'll also do the Dash 4s. I have both fiscals back, so just do the Dash 4s at this point.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Richard Whitman, the director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I am going to give you an overview of House Bill 228 with the Dash 2 and Dash 4 amendments. In both the Dash 2 and Dash 4 amendments, there are three primary parts to this bill. There's the original part of the bill as it was introduced by the department. This was an agency bill when it started out, which would establish a pilot transfer development rights program in Oregon, the general intent of which is to work with industrial forest landowners to transfer the residential, the very limited forest dwelling rights that they have on those lands, off of those lands to places where development is more appropriate, thus preserving forest land as working forest land to be used as working forest and to provide jobs and revenue to local and state government, and to have the development potential again occur in places where it makes more sense from a land use planning perspective. That's one part of this bill. The other two parts of the bill have been added in by the Dash 2 and Dash 4 amendments, and the first of those is a similar sort of demonstration project to allow a transfer of development opportunities from lands that have been mapped as eligible for the siting of a destination resort in either Jefferson County or Deschutes County in and around the Metolius Basin, to allow a transfer of those development opportunities to other lands in the state where resort small-scale recreation-oriented development might be more appropriate. I'm going to come back and talk about that piece of the bill in more detail. And then the third part of the bill is a specific demonstration project proposed for what is known commonly as the Skyline Forest or Skyline Community Forest if this part of the bill were to move forward outside of the city of Bend. And on that portion of the bill, you're going to hear from Central Oregon Land Watch and I believe from some other folks on that. So with that very brief overview, let me go back and talk first about the transfer development rights portions of the bill, which are in sections 6 to... Bear with me for just a sec here. I believe it's 6 to 9. Yes, 6 through 8. So this portion of the bill would authorize up to 5 pilot projects to transfer residential development rights from forest lands. And the key aspects of the bill are what lands the development rights can be taken off of, and then where would those additional development rights go. So let me speak to that briefly. In terms of what lands the development rights would come off of, it would have to be lands that are planned and zoned for forest use, where there is a threat that those lands will convert to dispersed large lot residential development and go out of active timber management in the near future. The sending areas are also limited to a maximum size of 10,000 acres, which effectively limits the number of residential units that could be transferred through this program to somewhere between 30 and 60 units per pilot project, depending on whether the underlying zoning allows development of a home on 320 acres or 160 acres. The receiving areas where the development would go to are prioritized, and you can move between the priorities if you can show that you cannot create the value with that additional development right in the receiving area necessary to buy the development rights off of the sending area. And so the first priority is lands within an urban growth boundary. The second priority are lands that are planned for forest use adjacent to an urban growth boundary. Lands for which an exception to goal 4, the forest goal, has been taken and adjacent to an urban growth boundary. Third priority is rural unincorporated communities. Then other lands adjacent to an urban growth boundary. Fifth priority is what are called non-resource or marginal lands. And then the last priority is other forest lands. So there is also a bonus in this act. You can get additional development rights in the sending area if you, as part of your project, are proposing affordable housing. And also, if the receiving area is within an urban growth boundary, the ratio can be higher and you can do more development within an urban growth boundary. Again, stepping back, this is intended as a pilot project to see if we can make this market-based tool for preserving working forest in Oregon work long-term. The department, if it wants to do this in conjunction with local government statewide, would need to come back to the legislature for authorization for the program. The specifics of how this would work in particular communities are not detailed in the bill beyond the screens that I've talked about, and that is on purpose. We do not want this to be a one-size-fits-all program. We want this to be a true pilot that's developed by local communities responding to local conditions in each area. So that is that portion of the bill. Let me next talk about... Actually, let me pause there and see if there are any questions from the committee about that portion of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, get this clear here. First of all, a comment. I believe we do have the expertise. I don't believe we should move so quickly. I'm very disturbed at how fast we're doing anything here. My question on the underlying bill.
Yes.
That would create this process to what you're talking about, a pilot project to go forward to. Okay, that I'm very interested in.
Chair Klim, Representative Shoffler, that is the underlying bill. That's the section of the bill that I just described in sections 6 through 8.
Thank you.
I am now going to talk about the demonstration projects for transfer of small-scale recreation-oriented communities out of lands mapped as eligible for a destination resort in and around the Metolius. These portions of the bill appear in sections 2 through 5 and essentially authorize 2 demonstration projects for a small-scale recreation-oriented development. The projects would be limited in that they could only occur with the consent of property owners of lands that have been mapped as eligible for a destination resort in and around the Metolius Basin. The owners of those properties, and there are 3 of them, one in Deschutes County, 2 in Jefferson County, would have to elect within 90 days whether they want to take advantage of this opportunity. If they do elect, they would then be given a year to prepare a development application in the county where this development would occur. It would need to be done through an agreement and in conjunction with the owners of that property where this opportunity for a small-scale recreation-oriented community would be sent from the Metolius Basin. Conditions of doing this, if the owners of the lands mapped as eligible for a resort in and around the Metolius agree to do this, they would have to agree to limit the use of their property in the Metolius to the uses that are provided for in the management plan that has been recommended to the legislature by the Land Conservation and Development Commission. In addition, the property owners would have to allow public access to the portions of their property that were not developed. So those are the main conditions on the so-called sending areas. Then in terms of the areas where this resort-type development could occur outside of the Metolius Basin has a series of screens on it. First of all, the lands have to be planned for forest use. They have to go in counties that have an unemployment rate, an average unemployment rate over the last 10 years that exceeds 110% of the statewide average over that same period. And Mr. Chair, I have copies of a table that shows what counties would be eligible under that particular screen. So while that's being handed out to the committee, it's roughly about half of the counties in the state of Oregon. Unless you want me to, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to read through the particular counties that are eligible, but it's about half the counties in the state that qualify under that screen. The intent, the purpose of this is to send the authorization for that development to counties that have higher long-term unemployment. This type of development is intended to provide both tax base and some long-term employment benefit to the counties where it goes. In part, that's because of an aspect that I haven't talked about yet. Two-thirds of the development that occurs in each one of these pilots has to be in the form of overnight accommodations. So that form of development has been shown through our destination resort program to lead to more employment benefits. Other screens for areas where this development could go, the same screens that exist in current law for siting of destination resorts. That means not within the Columbia River Gorge. It means not within 3 miles of high-value cropland, and it means not within especially sensitive big game habitat. It also, there's a screen that protects areas that have been identified by local government as either subject to development hazards or as protected under the statewide planning goals protecting significant natural areas, estuaries, coastal shorelands, and beaches and dunes. These couldn't go in those areas. Those are basically the screens to direct where this sort of development opportunity could be exercised. There are other development standards in the Dash 2 and Dash 4 amendments that are intended to assure that this form of development is sustainable in the long term. Many of those aspects of the bill were taken from prior drafts of legislation that I believe is in the House Land Use Committee, and I apologize, I can't remember the bill number, but essentially this concept that I think you've all heard about of some form of an eco resort. So the criteria are designed to make this green, sustainable as possible. The last piece I want to talk about for this aspect of the bill is just the process piece of how these would be approved by a local government if the property owners elect to carry it out. It would be done as a conditional use approval in the county where this is carried out, and go through normal siting process by the county. The county would have to want one of these development types of development to occur. There would be public hearing process, would be subject to development standards, normal county development standards, and so would be designed to fit into the normal development process for the county. So that actually concludes my description of that portion of the bill.
How long did
Vice Chair?
How many times did you practice this? You're doing better.
How is my timing, Mr. Vice Chair?
You're doing better than the president. You don't have a teleprompter.
I would be happy to entertain any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is my one county didn't make it on any of the list. And that's the other part of Lane that is not included in the Eugene Springfield MSA.
The other, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Roblin, Lane County.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's correct. Lane County would not qualify under the screen for 110% of the statewide long-term unemployment rate.
So would the Eugene Springfield MSA be considered Lane County?
Mr. Chair, Representative Roblin, the Eugene Springfield Metropolitan Statistical Area also includes the remainder of Lane County in that figure.
Okay. Yeah, so Florence always is considered, has problems with that consideration. I just thought I'd bring it up.
Yep.
They always feel a little bit left out when they say it that way.
So, Director Whitman, I think we're confusing people more than helping, only because we don't hear about TDRs every day. So what I'd like to do now is bring up some folks to talk about specific TDRs and the people who've been dogging me all session about trying to get this bill scheduled to chat about the forest industry's interest in this particular bill. And then we'll bring you back if there's any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we have two of our colleagues here, Representative Wisnett, Representative Stiegler. Would you like to join us? And then we'll bring up the interested parties after that. Whoever would like to start.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, District 53. Thanks for allowing me to testify in this work session.
You bet.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your effort in trying to move forth a bill that was really the intent of Representative Burley's efforts in the Community Forest Bill that I was a signatory to. It is about creating a working forest that's also enjoyed by the people. And I appreciate your time and effort you've put into that. You have talked to me some about this effort. I have not been contacted, for the record, I have not been contacted by LCDC. And members of the committee, Skyline Forest, or Skyline Community Forest, is in my district. So I'd like to put that on the record. I have not been consulted by LCDC or asked any input on this project or the plan at all.
And just, colleagues, so you know, I asked them to write the amendment, but they were not, they didn't bring this. This is essentially mine, Representative Stiegler. It triggered from a meeting a couple weeks ago with the Representative Fidelity saying, is there a vehicle? Are we interested? And this is the vehicle, and we're just trying to get to the finish line.
Okay. Mr. Chair, again, I appreciate your effort and comment. I was not involved in those discussions. It is my district. I came to this session knowing that that project was out there and talked to the people that own that land, and there was no plan at that time that anything had been done. About 2 weeks ago, there was information that they may be able to move on something with some money, and I said I'd be willing to move it forward. I think it's a great idea. You know, this is, you know, what I think we need in a community of that I represent, Deschutes County, that I don't represent at all, but Representative Stiegler and I represent most of it, is 16% unemployed, employment, Jefferson 18, Crook County 20%. So if we can put people to work and we can use the God-given forest that we have out there to create jobs, this is what we were looking at in the Community Forest Authority, and that's what I want. But Mr. Chair, in saying all that and looking at this, I'm here to oppose the Dash 2s and the Dash 4s. I just think it's too fast, it's too quick. The developers and their representatives that I've talked to, they want to do this, but the numbers that LCDC brought forth, they just can't pencil out to make this work. So I'm here to ask the committee to oppose the Dash 2s and Dash 4s. Mr. Chair, because I've got a good relationship working with you this session, I would be willing to give one of my priority bills and you as a co-sponsor, and let's take Skyline Forest out of this bill and work it separate as one of these projects, and I would be more than willing and work around the clock with you to do that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett, as we discussed right before the meeting, there's no amendment to take them out on the floor tonight, and as we discussed, I said I would put on the record that I would work on trying to make either the project work in the Senate or have it removed in the Senate, but there is no available alternative to do that tonight, and I thought we had that covered, but I'm sorry if I was mistaken. The remaining issue, again, just for everyone's record, is this is an authorization only allowed to the landowner. If they choose not to use it, if this bill were to pass, it becomes available as one of the pilot projects for some other timber company, and it's voluntary. They don't have to use it if they don't want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment?
If you care to, sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think the Chair, commend your effort on this. But there's some numbers here. I'm afraid if those numbers get put in a bill, it could kill the project indefinitely if we can't get those numbers moved. And that's why I would still oppose the Dash 2s and the Dash 4s.
Thank you for coming to join us tonight. Representative Stiegler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Judy Stiegler. I'm the representative of House District 54, which is in Central Oregon as well, City of Bend and down into Deschutes River Woods. Thank you for the opportunity to come here today and speak on behalf of House Bill 2228. Specifically, I'm speaking to the Dash 4 amendments that you have before you. I want to sort of go back a little bit and cover a little bit of the territory that the Chair and Representative Wisnett have covered here. Several weeks ago, a representative from Fidelity approached me along with some other issues they were discussing with me if I would be opposed to, or if there was a vehicle or a possibility of being able to bring Skyline Forest forward again and trying to get something in a workable condition, if I would be in favor of that or opposed to that. And I said, you know, if it made sense to both sides of this issue, if it was something that I saw that could be workable, I would be definitely in favor of promoting that. And in other conversations that I'd had with Representative Clem in around that same period of time, I indicated to him that if there was any vehicle that he foresaw that this could be brought into the mix, you know, please take advantage of it and do what he could with it. So it was in that spirit, I think, that Representative, the Chair went forward with trying to develop this, I think originally was dash twos, and then we've moved to a dash four amendment, which quite frankly is more favorable to the development company. So it wasn't in any kind of sleight of hand or anything nefarious or anything along those lines. It was purely in response to inquiries that had been made in and around. And so my apologies if any toes have been stepped on or if there's anything that I have done that's untoward or inappropriate. I was trying to achieve a bottom line, which is to take what essentially had become a stalled situation, a situation which I saw that was going to go nowhere because of entrenched positions on both sides, and try to bring it to a point of compromise and a point where it was at least in some respects a win-win situation, and where the desires of the conservation community of putting this very significant parcel of property into and creating first community forest in the state could come to fruition, while at the same time looking for an opportunity to create jobs and stimulate the economy in Central Oregon by not only the development aspect of this, but also the potential for ongoing jobs in respect to the community forest. So again, I saw this as a potential for a win-win situation for taking a situation that had found itself sort of intractable and going nowhere after all these years, and hopefully giving it a jump start and moving it forward. I support this proposal, again, specifically the dash fours, as I see it as a balanced approach to the process. It accomplishes two objectives. It does create and preserve, as a community forest, this tract of property, and as well, it creates an opportunity for jobs and economic growth in Central Oregon. I'm aware, quite frankly, that both sides have some issues with respect to this. I think the developers are not happy with the acreage amount nor the water rights. I think that some folks in the environmental community have some concerns that it's gone too far. In my 30-plus years of being an attorney, I look at that as when you have both sides who are neither one 100%, I guess you would say, satisfied with a situation, with a position, a proposal, then that means you've probably come to a good place. That's what you call a compromise. So it's in that spirit, and it's with the effort and the determination to try to get... I was very cognizant coming into this session of where what the position of the Skyline Forest was, is that it was stalled, and it wasn't at that stage of the game going anywhere. So I saw this as an opportunity, again, to get it off the dime and get it moving. And again, it's in that spirit that I have been willing to support this and promote specifically these dash four amendments. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Just a comment.
Yeah, please.
I'll be honest with you, I feel sorry, I have sympathy for both of you, but not as much sympathy as I have for myself tonight. But I just wanted to thank you for coming here tonight. Okay.
Mr. Chair, it is late hour, but I think it might be worthwhile to... The people that are going to do this have to have money, and those people are the developers, and you might want to... The committee would like to hear some of their concerns about this acreage or the water issues. I'm still, the way I'm understanding the system, if this bill goes out with those numbers on there, that's the most that's going to happen, and it's not going to move. And then the project dies, and we have no working force, we have no jobs in Central Oregon.
If this bill doesn't go out, they'll have their existing rights, which is one home per every 240. There will be no development, there will be no clustered project, there will be nothing other than what the existing right is, which is houses potentially built spread out all over the forest. This is the opportunity. Again, it's an authorization. If people aren't interested in using it, they don't have to. It will go into the unspecified pilot projects, and we're about to hear from some people who anxiously want those. So thank you, though. Mr. Peden, would you like to come up? Actually, Mr. Dew, do you want to come up? These two have been wanting this bill for a while, so let's hear what you like about it. You're both OFIC members?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Do you
want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, I represent Stimson Lumber. Stimson is family-owned. Its roots started in the 1850s. It's headquartered in Portland, Oregon. 600,000 acres in the northwest and also in Montana. It operates five mills, notwithstanding the economy. We are a family-owned business, as I said. Stimson will be in the timber industry for a long time. They have properties that are adjacent to development that, quite frankly, need to be developed at some point in time. And what we look forward to is an opportunity to preserve some farmland, excuse me, some forest land that ought to be preserved, still forest, that would not be developed. And we think this is, if you will, incremental. You have these deadlines. Sometimes we don't like them, but we would like to see this bill move forward and the opportunity to continue to work on these pilot projects because we think they work for Oregon. Our situation is maybe unique in that for Stimson, we have timberland that, again, ought to be developed over here and preserved over here. And there are formulas to do that, so it may be 1,000 acres, and you preserve four or five, depending on the rights that you give up on the development side. So we think this bill, quite frankly, ought to move forward, notwithstanding you've got some politics of Central Oregon. We understand that. But there is, again, this intertake that will continue. You know, quite frankly, this is not a perfect bill by any means. I think we all agree. But our clients in OFIC would like to see some sort of pilot project or projects move forward on forest land. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and give the floor to Mr. Peden.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Greg Peden representing Plum Creek Timber here this evening. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you, along with the thoughts and comments by Mr. Dewey that I wholeheartedly agree with. I'll just give you a little of the flavor of Plum Creek's interest here on about 300,000 acres in the state of Oregon, some of which are no longer actively forested, and we believe would be ripe for the potential development, specifically in the southern Oregon coast, right outside of Coos County or Coos Bay in Coos County, that would be a tremendous development opportunity along these lines. So with that in mind, and the target audience and the periphery around this, we would very much be in support of this bill. Thank you.
Any questions for these two?
One question.
Yeah, Representative Shoffler.
You have a preference on these amendments, which amendment you want, if you were going to choose?
Mr. Chair and Representative Shoffler, I don't, in the sense that we just saw the amendments maybe half an hour before. Again, I think this is a work in progress. We need to move bills along in this process. This has some heavy lifting. There is no question about that. So there is a lot to be done. It will not be perfect by any... I mean, I know it's not going to be perfect by our standards, but I do not have a preference.
And again, the difference between the Dash 2 and the Dash 4 only have to do with more home site rights out in Central Oregon, which if they don't use it, which it sounds like they're not interested in using it, it's irrelevant. That whole part extinguishes and just becomes available to the broader timber companies. So... thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions, please?
Thank you.
Okay. Now, Linda, do you want to come up and just chat? Eric, you can come up. Sounds like we're close to deal, we don't have one, but you can come up and say that to us so you can explain where we would still like to get if we can get some things worked out later on this, maybe.
My name is Linda Swearingen. I'm a representative with Fidelity, and I have Nancy Craven, who is the vice president of Cascade Timberlands, who is owned by Fidelity. And maybe we should turn this over to Central Oregon Land Watch first, since we just found out about this on Friday, and we're not, as you know, informed about it, and just received the amendments this morning. Fortunately, we had an opportunity to speak with you, Representative Clem, and you have made some changes, but maybe he should address you
for... I could, but again, 2 weeks ago when you and I talked and you asked me, was there an opportunity, that's what triggered this. And then I went to Central Oregon Land Watch and said, give me the most you can live with. So how about you start?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you right up front, the dash twos don't work at all. And if you pass them, nothing will happen. The dash fours, as we mentioned this morning, if we had a change in the 640 acres, that's on page 14, line 4, we've been asked to put 197 units in 640 acres. And if you have ever developed any land, to determine that in a matter of 8 hours without an engineer and without a land planner really doesn't make any sense, because what you've done is you've just put in a subdivision in the middle of this tract of land. And so we've asked the ability to put together a development of 197 and 1,500 acres, not 640. And then on line 11, we called the engineer and asked him, okay, if we have 197 residential units and overnight lodging units, we asked him, we said, how many acres of water do we need? And he said 200. So those are the two areas that we feel strongly about. In order to make this a project that will happen, we need those two things. And Nancy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nancy Craven with Cascade Timberlands. We've worked for some time in Central Oregon in an effort to come up with an economically viable project within the community forest. We're very interested in working with the community for the community forest. It's something that's been on our agenda for some time. It is not a simple process. I don't think it's necessarily stymied. We've undertaken a whole lot of community outreach, and we've worked with Deschutes County, the City of Bend, the City of Sisters, and Tumalo, and other communities. There are numerous interest groups related to the community forest. It is not solely limited to Central Oregon Land Watch, and we've worked with mountain bikers and horse riders and you name it out there, hikers, and we intend to continue to do so. In order to have it be in a situation where we can sell at timber value the remaining property, we need to have the project that we will be developing within the community forest to be an economically viable project. And that's why we've been working, and I very much appreciate the chairman's time today, and I think we did make significant progress. We didn't necessarily expect to be in a position today to be negotiating this level of detail, but I think we did make significant progress, and I think hopefully something can come from this. I do recognize it's a pilot project, that we don't necessarily need to take advantage of it, but I do appreciate Gene's comments that once some numbers get on paper, they're sometimes difficult to change, and I think we all need to realize that this is an opportunity that should not be lost, in my view, for Central Oregon. For that reason, we would we have those remaining two issues on the dash four.
Right. Thank you very much, Eric.
Yes, thank you, Chair Clem, committee members. I'd like to ask if there are specific questions that you have that any of the committee members have in response to that, or shall I just explain our position and our thinking on this?
Yeah, just explain your position, and
that'd be helpful.
They can ask questions if they like.
We are supportive of the Dash 2 amendments. Taking a look at the Dash 4 amendments, and there's an interesting concept there in including an additional tract of land down in the southern portion.
Could you identify yourself?
I apologize. Eric Kanzler, Executive Director of Central Oregon Land Watch. The Dash 4 amendments, as I was saying, have an interesting concept in that they are including a separate piece of forest land of about 14,000 acres down near the Deschutes County border with Klamath County.
Yes.
And
page 14.
That is an interesting addition to the mix. I have a call into my board right now as to whether we could support the Dash 4 amendments. I think that we probably could get there. We are a little out of our comfort zone, I have to admit, with that level of development. We're talking nearly 200 units. We would be opposed to expanding the development footprint to greater than is already listed in the dashboards. There is, for example, the Pronghorn development exists on 640 acres that has two golf courses, 430 homes, 215 overnight units, any number of other uses as well, all accommodated on 640 acres. So a very, maybe a little tighter than they would like, but substantial number of units.
Okay. Any questions for Eric? Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many total acres are we talking about here? Overall?
47,000.
47,000 acres. And you all want 1,500 acres rather than 640 for 197 residential units.
The difference between, Representative Shoffler, the difference between Pronghorn and this project is topography.
Mr. Chair, I don't need to get down in the weeds with you, ma'am. I'm asking you, you need 1,500 acres for 197 units rather than 640 acres. Is that correct?
That's correct.
In 40-some thousand acres.
Out of 47,000 acres.
Mr. Chair, I'll tell you what. I'll support these dash fours, but on the floor I'm going to make it very clear. I want this change to 1,500 acres. And that's all there is to it, because you're going to do several things. You're going to have the development, the trade, the development rights for the timber. You're going to have the skyline forest. And you're going to let these people make some money in an economically downtrodden area. I don't think that's a whole lot to ask for. So that's where I'm at. That's why I'm going to support it. But I tell you what, I hope and pray to God it happens, or I'll be very disappointed.
Well, and again, if it doesn't, I assume you won't use the authorization and it will go to someone else. I hope we can get there, because the South County piece, we've agreed, would have open access conservation easement for hunting and recreation, too, and it's a great hunting spot. So I'm going to keep working with our colleagues on the Senate on that number. Yep. Representative Winger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies, I assume that based on your objections to the dash fours, that you have similar objections to the dash twos, which are less...
They're worse.
They're worse. Dash two just doesn't work. It'll never happen.
And I'm not intending to move the dash twos, only the dash fours.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I want to go back to this point that you made about how having numbers like this codified essentially sets the parameters for future negotiations. So my colleague from Portland had expressed some desire to see some change along the way, but if this bill doesn't get that change, and even if it were to die in committee, I'd like you to explain, those of you who are in the business of development, how having numbers like these have some stamp of approval placed on a committee of the legislature, even if it isn't the entire legislature, could change the debate and substantially or financially affect your situation and your negotiation.
Well, we are interested, in order for there to be a community forest with a clustered project, we need legislation. We are going to need legislation, either this vehicle or another vehicle. If this vehicle is passed and it does not provide for an economically viable project for Fidelity to engage in the community forest with the community, then we will not have a community forest and the property will be sold by Fidelity. Fidelity owns approximately 200,000 acres in Oregon. We are working on many fronts to try to work with the interested parties with regard to the disposition of that property, including this community forest, which on a global basis, we need to be able to look at the results of this legislation and the activities that are occurring on the other properties and ensure that we have an economic return for our shareholders. We're a public company and we're required to have that fiscal responsibility. So to the extent that we can begin the process through this vehicle and result in an economically viable project for Fidelity on this community forest, in light of everything else that will be occurring with regard to our ownership in Oregon, we're prepared to move forward. I think it doesn't make any sense to adopt a bill through just even a committee that does not result in a feasible project. That's why we're at least trying to get through these dash four, something that Fidelity can look at, see how things result with other negotiations that you're well aware of that are occurring with other Fidelity lands, and see if we can make the whole picture work, and that's where we're headed.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sorry. Follow up, Representative Winger.
So obviously, if in this bill you get the negotiated acreages that you're looking for and you get a deal you can live with, that's one scenario. But assume for the sake of argument that the numbers don't get where you need, the bill's passed out. As the chair says, it's an option. You can choose not to exercise it. But I'm asking for you to tell me how that affects your negotiations to have these numbers placed in the bill and put out in an option, even if you choose not to exercise it.
Well, I guess I agree with Representative Winsett that if the numbers are prepared by the approved by the legislature, even though we don't exercise them, I think it's establishing at least a set of policies or politics with regard to how we may be able to proceed with the community forest. We're going, if this bill is not doable, we're going to need to come back to the legislature for a different vehicle to do the community forest, or we're not going to do a community forest.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
I'm losing my committee, so we're gonna take a motion on the dash fours in a moment, but yes.
Do you have more?
Is there anybody else who would like to speak? I'm looking for Ms. Squires, but I don't see her. There she is. Please. And Peggy. You hear from opponents too. League of Women Voters has some concerns, I think. 1,000 Friends, please. Let me get these other two back in here.
Go ahead, Peggy.
Did you want to speak?
Go ahead.
Did you want to speak?
What's up? No, it's fine. Please, Ms. Garza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hasina Squires. I appear before you on behalf of Dutch Pacific Resources, commonly known as the Metolian or the Eco Resort, in opposition to the Dash 4 and the Dash 2 amendment. As most of you probably know, my client is attempting to build the state's first eco resort. It will result in a $215 million construction project on their 627 acres of property that will then result in 100 living wage jobs created in Jefferson County, in a county that has an unemployment rate of 18.9% and 25% of their population is on food stamps. Ms. Director Whitman did correctly point out that several sections of the Dash 2 and the Dash 4 amendments dealing with the green or eco-friendly type of language in the bill were taken from another piece of legislation. Specifically, that bill is House Bill 3069, which is a piece of legislation that my client requested the introduction of. Actually, it went through this committee now that I think about it. The House Ag Committee actually introduced it as a committee bill, and that bill would have created the ability to cite and enact eco communities, and an eco community was outlined with a whole bunch of green different development criteria. That legislation did not have the language. So what we pushed and what we asked for were all of the green standards related to eco communities. The density levels that are contained and the overnight accommodations that are contained in the Dash 4 amendments, the two-thirds ratio of overnight accommodations, in our opinion, will essentially result, sorry, I'm looking for my notes because I've got so many pieces of paper, essentially result in a Hyatt hotel being sited in some other area. And so a two-third overnight accommodation requirement is just a big, huge hotel with some residences around it, in our opinion. The typical occupancy rate in Central Oregon is 50%, so it just doesn't pencil. It will not work from our perspective. Final thing that I'd like to leave the committee with is a lot has been said about the permissive nature of these transferable development rights, and you can choose to exercise or not choose to exercise. I would just like to highlight for the committee that House Bill 3100 contains language that adopts the DLCD's area of critical concern. That area of critical concern contains language that says that if the 2009 Legislative Assembly enacts a bill that provides for an owner or an affiliate of an owner of the property described in this section, and the property in this section is my client's property, the Metolian, to carry out a pilot project to develop a sustainable eco-community outside of Area 1 and 2, then the development authorized in this section is limited to two forest dwellings. So this bill definitely has a nexus with House Bill 3100, and if a transferable development right is enacted, and House Bill 3100 is to move forward, this will negatively impact our ability to... Number one. Well, House Bill 3100 would automatically do it, but this would take our development right down to two.
Ms. Lynch.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'd like to step back away from the conversations about the individual pieces of property, and I'm going to comment on the dash twos because those are the ones I had. So on page three, section three, it talks about creating one or two small-scale recreation communities. These are not unlike destination resorts, and so we're very concerned about the impacts to both state and local services with these communities, wherever they might be located. We do understand the tax, property tax impact, but there is also a service dollar cost impact to these projects. On page five, it talks about this particular project using reclaimed water. We're very concerned about groundwater replenishment, and so we want to make sure that if that goes forward, that that issue is resolved. On page seven, I want to thank you for the fact that there is a public process in this bill, that it talks about the local county going through a process. However, at the bottom of page seven, it talks about the county shall apply the development standards for an urban residential zone with the highest population density. I'm not sure that most counties have an urban residential zone, except for Washington and Clackamas counties, who run both a rural set of development codes and an urban set. On page five, we get into the DLCD pilot projects, and we're concerned with their workload. We need to get the Major 49's claims processed. The League has promised the LCDC chair to support rulemaking on affordable housing. Other bills that direct this agency's work are going through this legislature. So in the list of possible projects for DLCD, this goes way down our list. We did, however, support Senate Bill 763 that creates a generic transfer of development credits program and allows local governments to administer with willing landowners. I'm not sure how the nexus between Senate Bill 763 and the particular projects that are listed here go together. I'm not an expert on that, but we do believe that some opportunity ought to exist for transfer of development credits, and that there ought to be a conversation with willing landowners. On page 11, there is an interesting addition that a pilot project must include affordable housing. If this is worker housing for a destination resort-like project, that makes sense. Otherwise, affordable housing out in rural communities, we need the physical and social infrastructure that residents of affordable housing need, so I'm not sure that I understand the reason for that being in the bill.
Not in the dash four.
She's talking about the two.
Pages 13 and 14, in particular, talk about this water use, and there's this argument about 100 acre feet or 200 acre feet. I don't know if this particular property has a water right, so it's confusing to me as to whether or not this is. I'm going to finish. I only have one more point, but this is critical. I hope that this legislation does not afford them a water right that they have not received through the Water Resources Department. There is a process for that, and it ought not to go through this. The chair has heard the Department of Forestry budget discussion this afternoon about wildland-urban interface and has heard DEQ's issue related to well monitoring. Those are expenses that I see that will exist. And the last point I have is on page 14. It talks about applicable site plan and land division requirements of the county without having an opportunity to know if the counties actually have those in their codes. I'm not sure if this is a good bill. And I apologize for the technical nature of my comments. They were not meant to confuse, but simply to show that there are issues with the bill.
We'll argue.
Thank you. Ms. Kimball, I'm losing people, so just
so you'd like this to be fast?
Please.
I agree with Kate Kimball with 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I agree with everything Ms. Lynch said. And we think the numbers are too high in the Dash Force.
I know. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I will take a motion on the Dash Force.
I move the Dash Force into the bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler moves the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2228. Is there any discussion?
Yes, I want that
Schaffler.
Number change. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. You're very patient and indulgent with me. I would like that number to change from 640 to 1,500 acres. That's what I'd like to see. I hate saying we're going to fix it on the Senate side. It's exactly what I'm going to say on the House floor when we have this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, there really wasn't time for the type of total kind of mulling around in our heads what this all means, all of the possible consequences of this. I don't think if you gave us a test no on consequences, we'd all fail. That bothers me. However, I do want to echo what he said. If you got 47,000 acres and you're only asking for 1,500, I think that's a pretty reasonable request. And those who oppose it probably don't own 5 acres.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've discussed portions of this, and you know that I'm excited about it. I think there's some great things about it. We've heard testimony tonight that surprises me, catches me a little off guard. I'm specifically concerned, even by the summary that you gave us, about the relationship, and I don't know that we can air all that out, but I got to make sure you know, I'm concerned about the relationship between this and House Bill 3100. You were up front and put it right here in this first part of your paragraph, but it's gotten me very uncomfortable. And I'd have to say, Ms. Squires, I don't completely understand the nexus, probably because I'm a step slower than everybody here on the committee. But I don't completely understand the nexus, but it's got me very concerned. And then the other part is we heard some folks that are excited about it and can see some possibility in it. As I've already said, there are portions of it that I'm excited about in theory. But we've heard a lot of folks in the last few minutes who aren't very excited about it. And it gives me great pause.
Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
And it might, yeah, welcome. It might be more appropriate to the bill. I was feeling, you know, like I'm a little lost, although after hearing Representative Krieger's comments, I'm not sure I'm that much further behind everybody else, even after they listened to the discussion. So I'm going to go ahead and support moving the amendment, and I'll support the bill. I just want to make sure that I have a chance to review the discussion, and if I need to change my mind, I'm going to hold that possibility in reserve.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Leonard.
Just beyond the record, I am extremely skeptical that the numbers that my good friend from Portland wishes to see will ever actually appear in connection with this bill.
I wouldn't know who that would be, Mr. Chair, because I live in Happy Valley.
Everything north of me is Portland.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Representative.
Further discussion, Dash Force.
Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules for the purpose.
Oh, we actually don't even have to. We got it.
Okay.
Any objection to the Dash 4 amendments?
Yes.
Representative Wingard? Not. The amendments are... Amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2228 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation with the rescinding the referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Schaffler moves House Bill... just at ease for 1 second. What's that?
Do we actually have permission to...
I don't know. We got the subsequent... We're just checking on subsequent referrals. That's rescinded. Revenue's in. Oh, okay. I guess we don't have a revenue back. Okay. So we need to work with the suspension for revenue first.
Mr. Chair, I move I withdraw my earlier motion. I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of working House Bill 2228 without the revenue impact statement.
Representative Shoffler moves House Bill 2228 that the rules be suspended so we may vote on House Bill 2228 without the revenue statement. We have the fiscal, and the fiscal has come back with a minimal, and the subsequent referral has been rescinded by the Speaker, but we do not have the revenue.
This is a non-debatable motion, correct?
I know, I'm just trying to get you information. Yes, it is. Without the revenue impact statement being available.
Would you consider taking
those of the recess? Well, those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of...
What's that? We would consider taking a recess for 10 seconds.
Sure, recess just for a moment.
Yeah.
Where are we?
Under a motion.
Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2228 without the revenue impact statement being available for review will say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Meyer?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
No.
Aye. Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Clint.
Aye.
Motion passes. The rules are suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2228 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means rescinded.
Representative Shoffler moves House Bill 2228 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
I think in my 9 years of being here, there's a lot of separate pieces to this bill that do a lot of different things that a lot of different people have a concern about. And I know we can't change it, but we need to learn from this that we don't get in a hurry, because when we get in a hurry, we make mistakes. And we'll be back, I'll guarantee you, we'll be back next session or the one after trying to fix something here, some unanticipated thing that we've done. And I know we're trying to do good things. We want to create jobs and opportunity. We want to protect the environment. We want to protect property rights. And all these things are mixed into this thing. And you can tell by the way people spoke, their interest, they're sincere. But I think we've got to be very careful. We don't try to let something come in right at the end like this. Avoid it. Do our work that we need to be doing a month ago, whenever we can, so we don't end up with these sort of bills. I'll support it, but I'm going to be watching. And I do hope that you make a sincere effort on that land, the amount of land over on the Senate side.
Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, I won't repeat my concerns, but just I'll repeat that I will be voting for this and keep a commitment I have to you because you keep your commitments, and we'll see what happens. My favorite phrases not are, we'll fix it on the Senate side. I'm from the federal government. I'm here to help, and another one that we don't need to talk about.
Representative Winger.
Mr. Chair, here's what I have heard tonight. First of all, we're up against a deadline, and you've brought a major policy proposal in front of us. And we have had the quickest hearing I can imagine, in which we mostly heard concerns about the bill, and yet we're going to move forward on something that most of us only just saw, which I think is beyond bad policy. I heard there are two specific developers singled out in the Dash 4s, which are now 2228, mentioned by name, both of whom came forward and said they opposed the bill. They also indicated that they're going to be hurt by the movement of this bill. So you're welcome. And then I find out that we're going to rescind the Ways and Means, a letter that only the chair had. So because apparently this bill that creates a pilot program in one of our agencies has no fiscal impact whatsoever. I'm stunned at what has just happened here in the last hour and a half because none of it's real, and it wasn't a process that I think does the legislature any credit whatsoever, and I could not agree more with my colleague from the coast that we have no idea what the consequences of this bill are going to be as we just push it out. I just think this is a low moment. And apparently I'm going to be the only no vote on this.
Governor Corwin.
Thank you very much. I have been very quiet during the rest of the
day.
The interim, I spent an enormous amount of time on TDR bills and got to hear a lot of discussions about TDRs. And I, for one, believe that it is one of the few things that, from my perspective, offers hope to some of the rural areas. And appropriate development rights can be developed and use resources from urban areas and others. This bill takes a little farther than the TDR does because it doesn't depend on urban capital to move projects. It allows rural-to-rural projects to be developed. The exact numbers, I tend to agree, I hope that we can continue to work on those numbers. But my belief is that figuring out ways that allow counties and others to do some of these pilot projects will give us an idea of how the market can help us put development in the right places as opposed to in the middle of wrong places. And I look at the big projects over in Central Oregon and say, we really need to figure out an answer for this. This is a bill, from my perspective, that starts leading us in that direction. I may not get the exact numbers correctly, but hopefully we can work on that to get there. Because you do have to, in the TDR deal, you have to find that nexus about where it makes sense for groups to do things. And my personal belief is the sad loss of our vertically aligned forestry companies that used to be there. I appreciate Stinson being here because there's one left. There might be a couple others, but there aren't many of those companies left who have a real belief that their real business is timberlands and forestry and using those lands. Most of the others have gone to speculation and land and other kinds of stuff, and they have stockholders, and they have a responsibility to do the things they do for their homeowners. That doesn't have the same responsibility for a state like Oregon that it has resources for a long time being used in the forestry. And so figuring out a way for those companies to make the money they need and keep a forest is really important to me. I really want this to happen. And so I look at this as the beginning point for bills that will do that and actually find the nexus point. You know, I mean, I'm sure that not everybody's going to agree. There's no way, having done the TDR thing this last summer, there is absolutely no way that I'll get the two sides to actually agree. I mean, you're going to have to push one side or the other, one edge or the other, or you're not going to get that place where it pencils out for the company or the environmental side believes that you've saved everything you need to save. So that is a really fine line. So I was not it did not surprise me to have all these people not liking it. Actually, that generally tells me that we're getting close to the right place. You know, if one side really liked it and the other didn't, I'd know we were in kind of the wrong place after all my other good discussions. So finding that nexus point is what I think this bill is about. And so for me, this is a start. It isn't the solution to the problems that we have in rural Oregon. But I want to see working forests come back and start producing the jobs they can. I don't want to be held hostage that every 160 acres in the middle of this forest is going to become a house site, so I've got to figure out a forest around it. And until we figure out rational ways to do that within our economic system, we're going to have a hard time with our land use system even the way it is. So we've got to find these kinds of things that work over time. And I think this is a good start. So for me, I agree with people that we don't know exactly what we're going to get with this. I believe that it might turn out that nobody takes advantage of any of them. That's okay. We just found out that this is not quite where we need to be. But if we don't try some pilot projects and start figuring out where that nexus is, I think we leave the rural areas out there floundering and not knowing. And this one gives us a chance to start putting some economy back together. So thanks.
Representative Krieger.
One comment. If we keep talking, I'm voting no.
That's right. With that, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Meyer?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Wingert?
No.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Klein?
Aye. House Bill 2228 is sent to the floor. I'll carry it.
House Bill 3072, our last one.
We're in a work session, Mr. Chair.
Open a work session on House Bill 3072.
Mr. Chair, I move dash two amendments into House Bill 3072.
Representative Shoffler moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 3072. Commissioner Josie, just nod if you're good with them. There we go. Discussion on the dash two amendments to House Bill 3072.
Somebody want to explain them?
Sure.
Is it just the? Yeah. Is this really? You're the greatest.
I'll explain them real quick. It tells the State Board of Forestry by rule to adopt that the greatest permanent or the primary use of the Tillamook and Clatsop forests that the greatest permanent value is timber production, as we had talked about earlier. It tells them to begin by July 1st. It allows them to add areas back out of that if they are on steep slopes to protect riparian areas or our non-productive timber lands.
Just help me remember, was the original bill on this topic, or are we gotten stuff in it?
No, this is the original bill on this topic. The amendment is about adding these areas back in.
Okay.
Any further discussion on the dash twos? Representative Krieger.
No. Ready for motion?
I think we have a motion. Any objection to the dash twos?
No.
Seeing none, dash twos are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3072 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3072 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it with subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Byer?
Aye.
Representative
Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Shoffler? Aye.
Representative Wingert?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair
Klein? Aye. Motion passes. Bill sent to Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. And adjourned. The House Committee on Ag Natural Resources. All other bills from the House are dead.